I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Jason Silverman. He is director of the CCA Cinematheque here in Santa Fe, and David Carl, who is director of the Graduate Institute at St. John's College and the founder of the new Film Institute there. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
So you are collaborating, and of course you, Jason, director of the Cinematheque at the CCA, it's a natural thing for these films that are part of the Graduate Institute or the new Film Institute at St. John's to be shown on the big screen. First of all, let's start with David. What is this new Film Institute? I know we talked about it a little bit several months ago, but remind people what it's all about.
I think the idea that great films constitute serious works of art is not a controversial statement for anybody anymore. But it's not a statement that St. John's has caught up with in terms of devoting serious time and energy and thoughtful study to appreciating. So the goal of the Film Institute at St. John's is to bring the kind of care and attention that we've been bringing to great texts and great works of Western music for decades to works of great cinema. And the opportunity to work with CCA right here in Santa Fe was just such an excellent chance to bring someone with a great deal of expertise and familiarity with this area into our own new area of study at the college.
What's the nature of your collaboration? In other words, are all the films that are being discussed at the Institute being shown at the CCA, Jason?
Oh, not all of them, but some of the best ones. And so really the program generated from St. John's, but I saw the brilliance of the program right away and I just wanted to chip in. So I basically just tried to find the best format films of, you know, the ones that they were presenting. And so we've got films that are fairly pristine 35mm and films that are newly transferred to DCP. Some of these films are hard to find, and it's a very rare opportunity to see them on the big screen in good format.
I think that's a really big difference between what happens in like philosophy and literature and what happens in film, because I mean, any work of Aristotle is in any library. You can probably get it on your Amazon Kindle in 4 seconds, or you can go down to the library. But the idea that there are these classic films that are part of the canon, part of the great films of the world, are hard to even find. That's kind of amazing.
I do this for a living, and I was shocked at some of the gaps. There is the film Andrei Rublev, which is the last of the series of film by Andrei Tarkovsky, which was described as the greatest art house film of all time. And it's not available on Blu-ray. It's not available on 35mm. It hasn't been transferred. There's, you know, 5 different versions, from the most truncated version that the Soviet censors did, to knock off DVDs from Russia. It's one of the great films, and you can't watch it.
Amazing. And so, David Carl, how did you get your hands on these films for the film program?
Well, I'll say one thing in support of what Jason just said before I answer that. I began a sort of self-education process in order to get ready for this about 2 years ago of intensive watching, study, reading dozens of books. And I began, as the colleges want to do, with the earliest sort of history of the films, with Griffith, Chaplin, Murnau, some of the directors that we'll be showing this summer. I was amazed to find that Chaplin's City Lights, which is one of his greatest films, was not available even on DVD at the time. Now, in the last few months, it's been released by the Criterion Collection on a beautiful new Blu-ray print, but before that release, you simply couldn't see it on disc. I had to find an old Spanish DVD, and since it's a silent film, that didn't matter too much, but the print was of low quality. Most of the films that we'll be showing do exist in decent DVD prints, but the more I learn about film, the more I come to appreciate how much more you can see, not only on the big screen, but with an actual 35mm print, as opposed to on your television in your living room when you're just playing a DVD.
You know, in the grand old days of the art house and film clubs in the, you know, starting in the 50s, but mostly in the 60s and into the 70s, you would watch these films as films. I think now people watch them on TV and they kind of collect them. They want to cross them off their list because it's not really the same experience even on the grandest of plasma screens in digital format. It's a different experience to watch a 35 millimeter print or a restored DCP and see it as big as it can be seen with all of the nuance that these geniuses put into the frame.
And a lot of that is stuff that, I mean, I really encourage people to go see some of these classic movies on big screen, because I have noticed that in films that I've seen many times on my TV, which is not huge, but it's not minuscule either, there are, for example, in the background, there's a sign with a name on it that you would have never seen on your TV, and there it is, and it's part of the film.
And it doesn't even have to be anything as literal as that. We receive the depth of focus differently. The image size is a little bit bigger. A lot of times, the films you see on TV are, you know, panned and scanned, so you're not even seeing the full frame. So seeing them on the big screen is actually, you actually see a different film.
Very interesting. Now, this lack of access, I suppose you would call it, sometimes it's hard to even get a copy of the film, and even so, the viewing experience is different than it would be if you could see it on the big screen, has to affect filmmakers and how they are making films and what films look like today.
I think that's probably true. I think the idea of film as commodity has gotten ever stronger in the cinema's first 100 years. Although Tarkovsky said cinema was born in sin, meaning that it was born as a commercial enterprise and artists happened to get involved in it and find ways to make their movies. And there's still a lot of very creative people and artists who are making movies. I think most of what we see on TV and even at places at the CCA, although less so than at the multiplex, are made with a business plan as one of the foremost, engines. So these films, I think we can say, some of them are made inside the Hollywood studio, but they were made with a level of artistic intention that is rare. I mean, it was rare then when they made them, and it remains rare today.
David Carl, how did you choose the films, and how did your involvement with St. John's and the canon there, do you think, affect the choice of films that you have for the Summer Institute?
Selecting the films that we'll be watching this first 8 weeks, and the hope is that we'll have enough success with this initial Film Institute that we'll offer a similar program every summer, each summer featuring different directors, and the same notion of the auteur series that we're doing this summer, was a process that actually lasted about a year and involved several trial classes that I taught with both faculty and graduate students, and a tremendous amount of research. There was a period of time where I mistakenly was operating under the belief that in the same way that St. John's has put together a canon of the great books of literature and philosophy in the Western world, we could come up with a similar canon of great films. And after struggling with that for 6 or 7 months, I realized it's simply not possible. I couldn't do it. We're only going to be watching about 22 films over the course of this 8-week summer. I couldn't do it in 22 films. I couldn't do it in 100 films. I couldn't have done it in 500 films. What we did instead is a group of us worked together to come up with a list of about 150 major world directors from the 19-teens up until the 1980s and 1990s. And the goal of the Film Institute is each summer to pick 8 of those directors and feature their works over an 8-week period, being guided by a fairly wide array of different international cinemas and different styles, including black and white, color, silent film. But we're by no means claiming that there's anything canonical or absolute about the 8 we've chosen. We could very easily have chosen a different 8 for this initial summer.
Jason, did you enter into these discussions?
I didn't. The Film Institute made really strong choices. I think this is a really strong overview. I'm curious to see what the next 8 are going to be.
It's interesting. I think it's an interesting exercise, maybe, if you've got a free evening or week or year on your hands, to choose what your top 8 or top 10 or top 20 films would be that you would want to teach, not just want to see, but want to really study.
Well, now that we've committed, I'm feeling very acutely the absence of some of my favorite directors. for example, we wanted international range, and then I realized, well, we have two French directors, two of my favorite directors, Renoir and Bresson, but we didn't include an Italian director. I would love to have included, for example, Antonioni. I would have loved to have included another American or two, anyone from, say, Howard Hawks up to David Lynch. We just simply didn't have the time to include all of the directors that I'm particularly fond of and would love the opportunity to teach. So another reason to do this again in the future.
Very much so.
Not to mention third world and, you know, third cinema directors, people existing outside of Europe and the U.S. and Japan.
Said Jason Silverman, who's working on a documentary about Africa's foremost filmmaker.
Right. There's an interesting cinema outside of these established cinemas, too. So maybe next year.
Tremendous. Tremendously so.
So this weekend, there's a lot of things going on at the CCA, including the kickoff of The Auteurs, which is a series of films going on from this Saturday through the 4th of August. What can we expect this weekend, Jason?
Well, the kickoff of the series is Murnau's Sunrise, which is just one of the loveliest films ever. It's such a brilliant, generous, beautiful film. One of the most beautifully shot films. It actually won the first Oscar for cinematography. And the treat will be that we're bringing Hank Troy, who's this wonderful pianist from Denver, down to accompany it. And
nice.
It'll be a really special evening.
Live music accompanying a silent film.
Yeah, and we're gonna do more of that during the day. It's actually we started off with the idea of the Auteur series. We ended up scheduling our CCA's 35th birthday party for that same day. It's a block party, free and open to the public with. Six bands, I think five food carts, free art making.
A block party?
Yep.
What block?
CCA's block. It's
like
kind of more of a square
block.
On
the street or in the back?
Like it's in the front.
Okay.
Not really a block party.
All right.
You get the point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
House party?
Party.
Center party. It's going to be great. Lots of food, booze for the grown-ups, art making. It's going to be wonderful. And as a part of that, I wanted to do something in the cinema. And some of the most hilarious and inventive of Charlie Chaplin's shorts were just restored by a team of the best restoration experts and archivists in Europe.
Oh, my goodness.
So these...
That's huge.
We're showing 11 Chaplin shorts, all of them newly restored, from this incredible burst of time in the mid-teens, 1916 and 1917. He made... 20-something shorts in that two-year period. All of them were restored, and we're showing 11 of them. They're hilarious. Four of them are going to have live accompaniment. So, and it's all free.
Is that a movement in film right now? In people like you, and for example, independent cinemas, bringing live music in to accompany silent films?
I know when I was a kid, there was
none of that ever.
Yeah, it's been happening for a while. We used to do a festival at the Lenzic. It's great, though, because these films, a lot of them were accompanied by live music when they premiered, and it feels like a live cinema performance. The film really feels three-dimensional. It's not 3D, you don't know what to look at, the film or the musicians, and there's things, it's a really beautiful experience.
And the musician is interpreting the film as he or she sees it and goes along, and it's probably different each time.
It's different each time.
Yeah. So, David Carl, just tell us what some of the highlights of the Auteur series are for you. I mean, this weekend, Jason has just told us what we're going to see. What about some of the future weeks to come?
Well, Jason mentioned we're starting with Murnau, and he's been extremely helpful in thinking about the overall shape and form of these 8 weeks. We had toyed with the idea of starting with Theodore Dreyer. He persuaded me, and I think he was right, to start with Murnau. You mentioned that Sunrise is a film that had the first Oscar for cinematography, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're also showing Murnau's The Last Laugh, starring the German actor Emil Jannings, who, depending on what story you listen to, was the first actor to ever receive an Academy Award for Best Acting. Some people say the actual number of votes went to a dog that year, but the Academy didn't want its very first award to go to a dog, but they gave it to Emil Jannings, that, and then we're showing Murnau's Nosferatu, which is not the first, but one of the first great, well, one of the first and maybe the first great vampire film. And then the second week, we're moving on to the films of Carl Dreyer, and we'll be showing Fistful Vampire, which is another fabulous vampire movie. We're going to move historically through a number of directors, including Robert Bresson and some of the westerns of John Ford, and finishing with two of my favorite directors, Bergman and Jason just mentioned Tarkovsky. I was persuaded by some of my colleagues to leave out my very favorite Tarkovsky film, which is a movie called Stalker. But maybe next time we have a chance to do Tarkovsky again, we'll get to include that one, as well as the film Nostalgia, which, Jason, is it right that there's a 35mm of Nostalgia available now?
There's a newly restored 35mm print of Nostalgia.
Yeah, I would love to see that. So there's so many things that we're not doing. I'm very happy with the choices we made for what we are doing. My real hope for this experience is that people seeing these movies slowly and thoughtfully will be awakened to a great potential for things out there and will just sort of set fire to their appetites and become an insatiable desire for more.
An insatiable desire for more, indeed. Maybe we'll have a series through the winter as well as the summer.
I do want to mention that I hope people will come to the series, and we do have series. I know I'm not allowed to mention prices, but there are series passes. It's extremely affordable thanks to the generosity of St. John's College. And if you go to all of them, you're going to come out at the end a different cinema viewer than you were when you went in.
Well, there is a challenge, ladies and gentlemen. Jason Silverman is director of the CCA Cinematheque. They are on the web at ccasantafe.org. The number is 982-1338. David Carl is director of the Graduate Institute at St. John's College and founder of the new Film Institute there. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Great pleasure.
Thanks for having us.